This is the 17th season of Bass Talk Live with your hosts, Mark Jeffries and Matt Pingrack. BTL is brought to you by Lowrance, Basscat Boats, APCO, Duck and Fishing, Strike King Lures, Sunline, Big Bite Baits, Spro, XO Lures, Yamagatsu, The Bass Tank, and Denali Rods. BTL coming at you. Good Monday morning, everybody. Welcome once again to another edition of BTL, where today I'm flying solo. I'm going to talk bass fishing and anything else that I want to talk about. Folks, we got a good one today. We're going to have Dustin Connell on, the man that got it done at the Red Crest. And we're going to take some phone calls. I thought I'd open up, close out the show with the Sunline Hotline. If you want to call in, ask any questions, talk about anything. Really want to get your feedback on some of the stuff that went down over the weekend. We had the post-game show last night. And yes, that is why Matt is not here, because he is fishing the Open. And last night on the post-game show, man, the dude took a lot of grief. The man needs to learn how to use sunscreen. So anybody want to shoot me an email address? If anybody out there has an abundance of sunscreen, feel free to send me an email, mark@basszone.com, with your address. I'll give you, and we can get Matt hooked up with some sunscreen out there if anybody has any extra. All right, as I mentioned, great show today. We're going to kind of break down the rounds with Dustin and get his take on what went down to his victory and $300,000 richer, took home the prize on that final day on Lake Eufaula. Not Lake Palestine, not Grand Lake, but Lake Eufaula, and we'll get into that whole situation and how he handled that adversity. Folks, yesterday there was history made, and I might be the only guy on the planet that knew what took place yesterday that was history. For the first time in history, there was live fishing and live bowling on at the same time. Now, here's the other thing. Both events were won by anglers from angler from Canada, and the bowler was from Canada. Francois Lavoie won the PBA Tournament of Champions, and then Gussie got it done over on the Elite Series. To my knowledge, that is the first time that either one, astronomical odds for that to happen. I know they were doing stuff over on Fox Bet for the PBA stuff. I don't know how legit it was. I don't know if there was actual money changing hands, but I know on Fox Bets for the bowling part, he was plus 1,000. So in other words, if you made a $100 bet and he ended up winning, you were going to win $1,000. You were going to net out $900. So I don't know the whole scoop behind the whole Fox Bets thing, whether or not that's truly legit. Is it play money? Is it fake money? Is it Bitcoin? I don't really know what's going on with that, but I have been extremely vocal on this show over history that I truly believe that if there was wagering on bass fishing, that it would grow the sport. And not just grow the sport, but make it better. That's my deal. Trying to make it better, trying to expand, trying to let other people outside the industry know what's going on and make it better. And it would have been cool to see the fans go ahead and make a wager on the Red Crest, make a wager on what was going on at Knoxville. So we'll see if that ever happens on down the road. I certainly hope that it does. All right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. Many congrats to Francois Lavoie. That is a cool name. Just an impressive performance on not FS1 or FS2. That was on the main Fox channel yesterday, live at 1 o'clock Eastern time. And he powered through the field, an unbelievable Hall of Fame field. And the greatest bowler in the history of bowling of all time, Jason Belamonte, bowled 190 on television and got his tail kicked. So it was really, really cool. I was in heaven yesterday. We got the big win on Friday night. I had fishing on television. I had fishing on the web going on at the same time. And then at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I had bowling on television with the Tournament of Champions. By the way, our good friend Chris Prather, who was actually in studio, I think he bowled 200-300s that week at the TOC. I think there were 10 300s during the week, and Mr. Prather had two of them. I think he ended up finishing 10th. He was the defending champ, sporting the Strike King logo on the back of his jersey. And very, very cool. I actually got a text from him. Said he was bombarded with questions as to what Strike King was on the back of his jersey. So money well spent with that little adventure, because in bowling, especially on television and during the Flow Bowling coverage, that's all you see are the guys' backs. And you got the big Strike King logo right there on the dude's back. So good stuff there. All right, we're going to take a timeout and come back with a man that has the red trophy. It has a nice little check. $300,000. That would be pretty nice. All right, we're going to take a break here on a Monday. Come back with Destin Connell. Everybody stay tuned.
The ultimate fishing system starts with Lowrance HDS Live. The best fish-finding tools, from Chirp Sonar and Fish Reveal to active imaging and new active target live sonar. And complete touchscreen control, from your trolling motor to your big motor. For a limited time, building the ultimate fishing system will be easier on your wallet. Upgrade to HDS Live with a Ghost trolling motor, active target sonar, or live sight sonar, and save up to $800.
Basscat's legendary 20-foot platform has been paired with angler-approved accessories for 2021. Puma FTD features the proven hull used by many of the top names in bass fishing today, backed by a transferable lifetime warranty. The Puma FTD boasts a full team deck concept which enhances efficiency for you and your tournament partners. Turnkey tournament-winning performance. The Puma FTD SP from Basscat.
Hey Hammer fans, I'm Bill O'Neill, and I'm excited to tell you that the wait is finally over. The Black Widow 2.0 is precisely what you're looking for in a Black Widow. It's the perfect ball on medium to heavy oil lane conditions, with a big sweeping backhand motion that's going to lead to a lot of high scores. Black and red colors pay homage to one of the most successful bowling balls of all time, as we bring back the original reaction shape updated for today's lane conditions. All right, Hammer fans, that's it for the Black Widow 2.0. Don't forget, check us out on all social media platforms and visit us at hammerbowling.com.
Big companies get bigger and bigger and talk about their fancy labs where they study fish behavior, but then they all go golfing on the weekend. We don't have a large laboratory to test baits. Why, you ask? We don't need a big laboratory because our pros fish, our employees fish, our salespeople fish, our suppliers fish, our mold builders fish, our owners fish, and our kids fish. This is our laboratory. Our R&D comes from time on the water, learning how to make fish bite. All that time on the water brings us thousands of hours of testing new products and improving current ones for all species.
All of us on the Pro Tournament Trail use Gamigatsu hooks.
Why?
Because they are absolutely the best.
It's not about how many bites you get.
It's how many you put in the boat.
Yamakatsu makes hooks for every fishing style.
We didn't come this far to lose fish.
Did you?
For more information, visit gamakatsu.com.
All right, we are back on Monday, and it is time to go to our special guest. And by the way, I'm really curious. I know I'm running these bowling commercials now because Brunswick is a part of what we're doing here on BTL and some of the stuff that I have going on over on the bowling side. But I'm curious. I've received emails. A lot of people said, hey, man, love the bowling stuff. If anybody out there goes out and buys a Black Widow 2.0, please shoot me an email. I have four of them, all right? They're very, very, very good, especially if you have a high rev rate, low rev rate, whatever, it doesn't matter. Anybody out there, I'll tell you what, if you bought a Black Widow 2.0, shoot me an email with your address. I'm going to send you a tackle pack just because you bought a Black Widow 2.0. We'll see how many emails I get on that one. All right, it is time to go to our guest. And just an outstanding performance last week and over the weekend. The man's got the red trophy. Let's bring him in now. Dustin, how you doing, man?
What's going on, guys? How are y'all?
That is quite the piece of hardware you have behind you.
I got him back here. And, man, it was very hard to achieve and get, but it's here.
It is there.
It's at home.
Yes, it is. And we're going to get into a lot of details about how you earned that red trophy. First of all, I want to go back and I want to go through your mental preparation when, number one, it was supposed to be at Grand Lake. And then that you had that change. And then the shift was to Lake Palestine. And then due to the entire mess that was taking place because of the weather down there, now all of a sudden it's at Lake Eufaula. Take us through that process of how you got yourself ready with all the changes.
You know, I was 100% positive we were going to Lake Palestine. So, you know, I rode down there and I practiced. I put in some pre-practice time and, you know, it's like a 9 or 10 hour drive from my house. And I stayed down there and it was cold while I was there. And, you know, I'm fully prepared to go and fish a cold water Lake Palestine, like water temp 36 to 40, you know. And then, you know, 2 days ahead of time, you know, it was very unfortunate. You know, the people in Texas, gosh, man, that was a crazy deal. Like once in a lifetime storm that came through. And boom, we're going to Lake Eufaula, which, of course, now I'm glad we went to Lake Eufaula. But as far as a safety standpoint, you know, Major League Fishing made the best choice that they could, you know, because west of Alabama, everything was frozen over. I mean, it's crazy, you know, but we ended up going to Lake Eufaula, and I'm glad we did.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. All right, let's talk a little bit about your practice. It seems like that you felt confident based upon what you just said, but it sounds like that practice was kind of so-so.
Well, you know, anytime you go into a tournament, you know, I've always said this, I try not to go in with preconceived notions like, hey, you know, the weather's warming, you're looking at the weather, you're like, all right, it's springtime. You know, that Eufaula is notorious for fish getting shallow and muddy water. And I'm like, oh, buddy, Friday, the weather was looking really right all week. And I was like, Friday's going to be, like, they might be on bed spawning on Friday, you know. And man, I just kept an open mind in practice. I said, all right, look, their fish are not up yet. They're not up there shallow. So I don't need to go practice shallow yet because you're just going to be up there waiting on them, you know, to show up. So I fished deep in practice, and it was so-so. You know, I think the fish were just still out in their deep winter hunts. You know, they were, instead of in 8-foot brush and on docks, they were out in 15 feet, you know. And
wow.
They were swimming up every day in the tournament.
Wow. All right, talk a little bit about practice.
All right, so practice, I decided to idle my whole practice. You know, I was using my Lowrance electronics. I was idling. and I was looking for brush piles in, you know, 12 feet and above, you know, 8 to 12 foot. And what I thought in my mind, it's like you, I don't really know what you want to call it, but it's like not the first thing you're thinking on your mind, but it's like, all right, I got this kind of like, okay, they brush is some reason I keep idling over brush. I don't know why. So I was like, all right, brush, brush, brush. And I just started marking. There's so many brush piles in this lake, it's unbelievable. So I marked probably 40 brush piles, and I caught a couple good ones out of brush in practice. So I was like, all right, the first couple days, my game plan was I'm going to fish kind of deeper. The fish have not moved yet, and then we will transition during the tournament. So that was my plan. I idled in practice and found as much stuff as I could.
All right, day one. You're in 19th after day one and day two. Kind of talk about your first 2 days in qualifying.
The first day, I had a little hard spot, I guess you would say. It was like in 10 foot, and I found actually like a little school there. There was probably 10 fish, and I caught a 4-pounder there in practice, and I said, all right, well, maybe I can start on this and catch a couple, and then we'll just see how the day goes. So I started there on that place. I caught a 4-pound, I think 3-ouncer, and then I caught another like 2.5, 3-pounder. And then I stayed out deep that first day for a long time, and it just was not happening. And then, you know, I went shallow later in that day, and I ended up catching a couple. And it was a very tough day. And then the second day, I was like, all right, so now let's just stay shallow all day. And I ended up getting really fortunate. I caught a 5-pounder on a crankbait that morning. And then I love swimming a jig. I love fishing shallow, flipping, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I did that the rest of the day on, you know, Tuesday. I caught one more fish for like 2 pounds. And so right when you think you got like a little glimpse of hope and you're like, okay, maybe I've unlocked the code, you know, it just wasn't happening. And I was like, man, we got to make major moves. I was fortunate. I slid in 19th place. All the weights were zeroed. And then we went to a knockout round.
All right. I want you to tell me and the fans out there listening, once you went to the next round after day one and two, what did you do when you got back to wherever you were staying to get ready for the next day? Tackle-wise, did you make big changes? Did you re-spool your reels? What did you do? What was it like thinking, man, I just went out, I only caught 2 fish, but we're dropping weights, we're ending this thing. Do I need to do this? Do I need to do that? What were your thoughts?
So there comes a point, I guess you would say, in every sport, to where when you got to call an audible, you know, mm-hmm. It's like things just shift. You're like, okay, if you keep doing what you've been doing, it ain't going to work. You're hoping on a prayer. And not many tournaments are in any sport, you just can't rely on luck. These guys are so good, you have to make things happen. So I called a complete audible. I said, look, I'm not going to swim a jig. I'm staying away from the bank. That's the only way that I can make this happen. And on the knockout round, you know, I was out there. I was thinking tackle-wise, all right, I'm going to go fish brush again. I'm going to go idle. And I tied on 2 jerkbaits. And I love throwing a jerkbait. My mindset was like, all right, if I don't catch them early in like some dingy water and some brush piles, the water was clearing. I knew that. That was a very big key that I kept in my mind. And that's why I couldn't catch them on Tuesday, the second day of the tournament, because the water cleared up. And it was very, very, very hard to get a bite. So I tied on 2 jerkbaits. And I said, all right, guys. I was shooting a YouTube video, and I set it in there. And I was like, we're calling a big audible. I'm going to do what I love doing. It's either we're going to catch them or we eat. And I really stepped out there, you know, and I was like, all right. I went practicing on that knockout round, and like a very pivotal moment was at like 10:30 that morning. I was using the Lowrance active target, and I threw my jerkbait out there to a brush pile, and I saw 2 fish rise up after it, and I caught one of them, and I was like, huh, light bulb. And, you know, the tournament really started at that moment.
All right. I'm going to queue up some video, hopefully. Hopefully you can see it too. And here is a still shot of it. And the fans can see this, Dustin. Can you see it?
I see it, yeah.
All right, kind of describe what you're looking at. Obviously, there's a brush pile down there. You're looking at your Lowrance stuff, but what's going on right here? And then I'll cue up the video.
All right, so right now I am concentrating on, you know, 8 to 12 foot brush. I'm looking at my active target. I'm throwing a jerkbait, and I'm panning over there. I'm looking at fish right now, probably on my bait or, like, coming out of a brush pile. Well, there we go. We just hooked up.
Yeah.
So I'm actually watching that fish trail my bait. I'm trying to get that fish to react on it. I'm sitting there, you know, throwing that jerkbait, getting him trying to react. And I can watch every move of what that fish is doing, whether whatever cadence is turning him off. And when I say cadence, it's just, you know, 1-2, 1-2-3. And whatever cadence works, you better stick with it. And these electronics nowadays are unbelievable. You know, you've seen these guys in these tournaments, bass tournaments, FOWs, all this forward-facing sonar. I've really spent a lot of time learning this technique, and it's a pretty crazy deal when you can throw your bait, watch it fall, and then watch fish bite it. I mean, it's nuts. So, but, you know, concentrating on that brush piles in 8 to 12 feet, that's what I did the whole tournament. And I promise you guys, I did not make a cast without looking at my bait because I wanted to know what was about to happen.
So what you're telling me is that you do not win this tournament if it was not for your electronics.
No, absolutely not. You know, I've fished deep a lot, you know, since I was 12, 15 years old. And I really understand fishing deep, but you know, used to, we would just get a year ago before I had forward-facing sonar, you would use a heading extension on your graphs, which you just put a line out in front of where you're at. You would turn your heading extension towards your waypoint, tap on your screen, say, hey, I'm 75 feet away, and just start bombing until you hit the brush. And then when you get hung up, you're like, dang, and then you blow the brush pile out, and it's just like, it's not efficient, which that's all I've ever known. And now it's like, holy smokes. You know, I can see the brush pile. It's almost too easy, man. You throw out there and you're like, all right, I'm over the top of the brush pile. There's three fish coming. Boom, I catch him. You can reel him in and watch him. Nuts. I mean, I'm telling you guys, that is the deal. For real, it's the game changer.
Wow. All right, can you talk a little bit about the jerkbait? And did it have any unique characteristics that were different than other jerk baits?
Okay, so I don't know. I think this was a really big difference between me and some of the rest of the field. Okay. All right. Now I'm gonna get into depth with you guys. This is I call this a nugget. So I'm gonna.
That's what we want. We want the nuggets.
I'm giving you guys some nuggets right
here. All right.
And I'm kind of iffy about giving it out, but I'm gonna just tell you.
All right.
So, the biggest key with that forward-facing sonar, the active target, was when I would get up to a place, you can't throw a jerkbait 85, 90 feet. It's just not possible. The bait is not heavy enough. The wind might be blowing. You're throwing it on 12-pound line. I'm throwing it on a short rod. I couldn't get it out there. But the key thing is if I can't throw it out there that far, I'm still trying to stay away from that brush pile, because if you get too close, those fish get really, really finicky. They do not bite. They can feel that boat presence there, you know. So within like 50 feet, man, it was really tough to get those fish to bite. The key length was like 50 to 70 feet. When they got in within about 40 feet of that boat, man, they would turn off that jerkbait and swim back to that brush pile, and you couldn't get them to bite, and then they're done. So I was throwing a deep version jerkbait. It was called it was a color crystal shad. You know, I'm not sponsored by the company, but it was a Strike King jerkbait. And then I throw a ton of different jerkbaits. I've got old school Rogues in there, but the key was throwing a deep jerkbait for me. And it wasn't that I was jerking, I wasn't fishing deep water. It was, I would throw that jerkbait way out there, and I only had to reel him like 2 to 3 times to get him down to that depth. And because a regular jerkbait takes probably 10 or 12 feet to really get down to 5 or 6. So I'm cutting my distance off by using a deeper jerkbait. So I throw it 75 feet, I reel it 2 or 3 times, and he's in the zone already. And that was a big key, staying away from those fish and getting them to bite.
Nice. That is a nugget. All right. Joseph has a question on the YouTube comments. Wants to know, do you think that you or somebody else would have had success if you didn't have the forward-facing sonar, the Lowrance, if you were able to find those brush piles, but you were just kind of blindly fishing the brush piles? Or was that an absolute critical part that you had to see the bite and see those fish come out of the brush?
I will tell you this. You know, I've thrown a jerkbait a ton around trees and brush, and I would have caught some, but the rate of catch and me getting those fish to trigger, absolutely not. I would have never – there were so many fish. Like, if you go back and watch the live footage or, you know, any of these videos, you see a lot of these guys, not just me, but you're like – they're sitting there like, eat it, eat it, eat it. I was straight begging them to eat it. I'm like, please eat it, eat it, eat it. And then finally I would just lock up with them. But not knowing that fish was behind it, I would have just continued throwing the jerkbait, and I've been having the same cadence, and that fish would have followed me in the whole time, and he never would have bit. And, man, it was just – it makes more – it's efficiency.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to roll up some new footage here. And you're hooked up.
Yep. I was sitting there watching that fish. He was behind it, and I was trying to get him to bite. And, man, this goes way into depth, but, oh, my gosh, I didn't know that was that fish. That's a heartbreaker.
Yeah.
that's a heartbreaker.
I know. So the reason I queued up that video is I wanted to know what your thoughts were at that moment, because the time was running out, and, you know, it was a critical time, and the emotion that you went through on the live feed and everything that was taking place during that last segment. I mean, dude, tell the fans what it was like. Explain what you were going through.
Guys, I've tried and tried to keep my composure and doing everything. You know, it's like, hey, you've been close before, and you're just like, just keep your composure, you're good. But I'm just telling you, like, the last 30 minutes, really the last 15 minutes of that tournament, man, I locked up. I'll be honest with y'all. I locked up. I could not look at my graph. My memory was going in and out. I couldn't really look and see where my brush piles was. I was making bad casts. I was just like, oh, my gosh, I'm shook up right now. I just wanted to sit down and literally get in a ball. I mean, it was so nerve-wracking, and I was just done mentally, physically, emotionally already. And the tournament wasn't over, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And then Michael Neal caught like a 4.5-pounder. I was like, oh, my gosh, yeah. It's going to slip away. There's nothing I can do with it. And, you know, I went in to – I talked to Jacob about this after the tournament. I said, man, you really know how to hold your composure. He was like, dude, I've did this a lot. And you see these guys that win, you have to absolutely go into kill mode in like the last hour. Like, you can't – you have to zone it all out. Who cares about the tournament? Who cares about the big trophy? You have to go into the mode where it's like, get it done now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that last 15 minutes, it just didn't happen. I was so a nerve wreck. I was so emotional. But that was just – I don't know where it came from, guys. It was just a lifelong – oh, my gosh, man. I mean, I still can't not believe that happened. But it's just all the hard work and everything that you do and all that – you know, not just the hard work, but the losses, man. You know, the shortcomings, all that stuff. It was all meant to happen. You know, it pushed you harder and harder. So, crazy deal.
Yeah, that's great stuff, dude. And the drama of that last 30 minutes, and even though you had a pretty good lead, but Michael Neal was rallying once again. And that's really the drama and the beauty of what's taking place. And really, I wanted to see if we could get some of the emotion. And I could see it in you. I could see it right now. You could just cringe and see the emotion that you were going through when I was playing that video.
Gosh.
And that was part of what I did. But, man, the celebration, once the clock ran out, once the zeros were on the screen, it was emotion. It was a celebration. And I know a lot of people are really happy for you, man.
Thank you, man. I said this in several different videos, but like I've seen my buddies win. You know, I've seen Jordan Lee win. He's won two classics. I've seen Jacob Wheeler win. I've seen these guys do it. And it's just like, it isn't envy, you know, from it. I'm not envious from it. It's just like, gosh, man, please, when is it going to happen? When's it going to happen? And it happens when you least expect it, guys. So if you're out there and you're fishing tournaments, local tournaments, I heard you talking about bowling earlier, which I enjoy bowling myself. I'm trash at it. I stink.
It's all good, man. All right. I want to go back because one of the things that even when you become a champion, right, every single person that we've talked to on the show after they've been victorious, they learn something.
Yes.
And was there something in particular that you learned this week that you're going to continue to capture that knowledge and you're going to be able to perform based upon what you learned this week?
I would say the number one thing that I learned was to trust your instincts. Like, you know, don't force a technique or like have a preconceived notion to just go and do something. Let the fish talk to you and tell you what to do and be open-minded. I mean, my instincts was telling me like, please, like Dustin, they're not up shallow, quit being lured to the bank. And it was so tough because the water and everything lined up, the mud was there, the water temp was there, the fish wasn't there. And I something just kept on telling me to go back out there and try this. And I guess you would say just trust your gut. You know, trust your gut. I mean, that right there is, that goes a long way in any kind of sport, but that, especially fishing, trust your guts.
All right. A couple of questions that people have on the instant feedback about how far were you off of the brush pile when you were making these casts?
I was, you know, I would pan that, you know, the active target out 100 feet. I have it set on 100 foot. And I could see that pile at 100 feet. I would get in there and I would keep tapping on my screen and say, okay, I'm 112 feet away. I'm 100. And within 100, I would see it. And it was so nerve-wracking pulling up to these places because I would wait till I would get like 80, 75 feet, I would make my cast. Or 70 feet, I would make my cast. And I would land a little past the jerk bait, the pile. And I would reel it down, and I was right there where I needed to be at. So 75 feet.
Okay. What was the connection between the brush piles and the banks?
Those fish, I think this was also a big deal. What you had to have a brush pile that was connected to the bank. There's a lot of offshore humps and a lot of long-running places. And near the bank, that's where the fish were staging up. And if it was connected to the bank, so the water was down. There was no structure for them to get on. They did not want to be up there in 2 foot. So the nearest drop that had structure, they were on it. And that was those piles in 7 to 10, 12 foot.
All right. Very nice. I'm looking at the comments. Dave wants to know, did you ever jump in the lake?
No.
A little chilly.
So I was going to, I'm just telling you guys, I was full. I was going to do a swan dive, just straight in there. But we had to get back and do an interview and all that, and it was starting to get dark, and my cameraman Rick was like, man, we got to roll, and I'm like, all right, let's go.
All right, no swan dive. Several people want to know, how spooky were these fish in the brush piles?
I would say, I mean, you knew, you could kind of tell what brush piles were being fished, or I guess you say community brush piles. The fish were very hard to get to bite, but if you pulled up to a fresh one that nobody had fished, man, they would bite the first cast, like boom, like they were coming straight out of the brush pile and fighting over it, you know. And I would say when you got a little sun and some cloud, I mean some sun and some wind, man, they bit really, really good. Mm-hmm. But the key was staying out. You had to stay away from them. You had to be very methodical, turn your trolling motor down to like 3, ease up to them. Couldn't get in a hurry, because if you go up there in like 100 mile an hour and then you blow it out, they leave. So very meticulous.
How long did it take you to get really comfortable with the active target system?
I had the active target for probably 2 weeks. And
wow.
Yep, I had it for 2 weeks, and I went every single day that I had with it. And, you know, the settings that it had on it were pretty accurate right out the box, you know. And the biggest thing that I had to do personally was get the angle of the transducer right, depending on your depth of what you're fishing. Because I wasn't really concerned about what's underneath the boat. I'm worried about out here. So I had to get that transducer turned just right. I tinkered with it just enough, and I was like, all right, this is perfect. And I just learned as much as I could in those, like, short 10 days, I guess you would say.
All right. Man, I'm trying to look at two boards at the same time. I'm sorry. It helps when Matt's here, because Matt can kind of deflect while I'm looking at all the comments.
That's right.
Let's see here. Several people want to know, now that you won, what are your thoughts on the remainder of the season and going in to the next stop at Sam Rayburn?
You know, what's crazy about this deal is, I've said this a lot. The next tournament, you're only as good as your last tournament, you know, and I'm already starting to prep for Sam Rayburn in Texas. And, you ride this high off. Momentum's a huge deal in fishing or any sport, but it feels good to have a great start to the season, but we're just now beginning. You know, these guys are going to fish, and they're going to catch them, and just because you catch them the last tournament, it's a whole brand-new deal. So we're going to continue working hard, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the year. You know, we're at a point where the cold fronts are starting to ease up. It's starting to warm up. Man, I love this time of year. You can get out there and throw a frog, catch them shallow, And then right after that, they're going to get back out deep in May, and I can't wait. So the fishing's about to fire up, and this season is it's going to be a good year.
All right, Dustin, for those fans that are out there that may not know, you have won before, but my question is, was there a period of your career where you started to feel the pressure from a financial aspect of, rather than going out and trying to win, that it was more about, man, I just need to get a check? Did you go through that at all?
So right when I started, you know, I've got a long story with how I got here and all that. But right when I started, absolutely. You know, we're paying entry fees and everything. And I was very, very, very fortunate to win my fourth tournament, when I was at the Elite Series. And that really helped out a lot. But, you know, making those checks and it without winning, it was more about being consistent. You know, mm-hmm. You can finish top 10 in points. I mean, last year we finished top 10 in points. A year before we did. But as long as you're making checks and as long as you're coming home and not being in the negative or in the red, you can continue doing this. A win is amazing, you know. But being consistent and, you know, always getting a check and staying in that top 10 and staying relevant with your sponsors and everything, that was – you know, I almost started thinking, man, I was like, maybe that's my deal. Maybe that's just my deal. I'm just going to be consistent as I can. You know, you see guys, they go out here and they fish a long career and they're super consistent and they just don't get no big wins. And then, man, it just happened. It just happens out of nowhere. But that financial side of things is a very important deal in this business. Gosh, man, you feel it start, I call it, starting to choke you out every now and then. It's just, it happens, you know. And then when you go into save the day mode, you're like, oh man, everybody right when they launch the boat, it's like, we're gonna win this week. Let's go. We're all enthusiastic about it. And then practice goes bad, and then you're like into day two and you're like, well, let's go get a check mode. And that happens, you know. So absolutely.
All right, a number of people want to know, how many brush piles did you find in practice that you actually went to during the event?
So, I had fished Eufaula. I fished Eufaula 10 years ago, And I knew a section, several sections of the lake that had a lot of brush piles, very well known, the lower end down there where it's clear. I probably had 30 or 40 brush piles, maybe 50, 60 brush piles that I had previously knew about from last year. But this year, I probably marked 40, I guess you'd say, new ones.
Mm-hmm.
But the main ones that I found that I fished, I found those in the knockout round. I had 45 minutes, and there was one little zone of the lake down there that was clear. I idled for 45 minutes. I found probably 25 extra brush piles. That's what I won the tournament on.
There you have it, everybody. I'm sure the brush piles are going to get pounded here over the next couple of days, probably even the next week and a half. So we'll see about
that. That's right.
All right. Several people want to know, do you have multiple brands of electronics, or are you specifically Lowrance?
I'm specifically with Lowrance. And, you know, I fished last year. I did not have any kind of forward-facing sonar. Active Target had not came out yet. And you've seen a lot of guys, they were running Garmin's, and they were running all these other brands on their boats. And Jacob did that, and I was, man, I just wanted to go rip some of that stuff off his boat. I was like, buddy, I did not know that it was a very big deal. And man, now it's just like, holy crap, how did I fish without it, you know?
Yeah.
So I just ran Lowrance, man. That's what I've ran since I started doing this deal, and that's what I got on my boat right now.
All right, very nice. Where's ultimately the trophy going to go, man?
It's going to go probably in here on my mantle in my house. You know, I'll set it in here in my office and all, and I can't believe this deal's sitting behind me still. It's crazy. nuts, guys.
All right. Any plans for the money? I mean, we're not trying to get personal here, but is there something, that one specific thing, man, if I win, I want to buy a new flat screen TV or whatever. I don't know, man. Is there anything on the list?
Well, you know, I started thinking about that, and I guess it's only appropriate. I've been really wanting a pontoon boat just for in the summertime, you know, take my family out on, and I may just go out and just get a pontoon boat just to go hang out with. I mean, I guess that's appropriate. You go win a bass fishing tournament, then you got to go buy another boat. So there you go. That's probably about it, guys.
That's awesome. The trophy is pretty heavy, though, isn't it?
It is. It is. It. I had a very hard time, you know, pushing it up because that thing probably weighs 75 pounds, and it's a pretty hefty deal. It's about 3 foot tall.
Yeah. What was probably the coolest phone call or text message that you got after your win?
You know, I got, you know, of course, all my family and everybody, but I got several texts from guys that we fish against, you know, Edwin Evers, Ott Defoe. The list goes on. And man, I'm just telling you guys, when you get a text from Edwin, they're like, man, I'm 30, but I remember when I was like 12, 15 years old, I'm watching Edwin on TV, like idolizing these guys. And I still do to this day, you know, I mean, they're the guys. And, I got a text from Edwin. I texted him back and I was like, man, it's truly humbling just to fish against you guys, you know, much less win. But that was a cool deal. It really was.
Yeah. Save print screens of those, man. Capture screens. Yeah. Yeah. That's good stuff. You know, there's a lot of people watching and a lot of people really like your YouTube stuff. How did you get into that?
So, all right. So I have always been this way. I just like going bass fishing. Like, that's all I care about. I've never cared about filming or anything like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jacob started filming a lot, and then the game has changed. You know, you see, like, Mark Daniels, good buddy of mine. The game has changed where you're like, all right, it always elevates. You know, YouTube is just another avenue for us to film and let everybody know what goes on a day-to-day basis. And it's actually a lot of fun. I love doing it. But I've got my camera guy is, you know, his name is Brett. He works really, really hard, and we worked together all last week, and we're really pumping out a lot of videos. It's cool for me to look back because I can relive everything, you know. But yeah, we're pumping out videos this week for the Red Crest, and you know, it's just a pretty cool deal. You can go back and look at it, and everybody loves watching how it goes down.
You know, a lot of the YouTube guys, the touring guys that utilize YouTube, I always wondered, do you check out what other people are doing, and do you actually get information that you find useful in some of the tournaments by watching what some of the other guys are doing? What are your thoughts?
So, all right, perfect example. When I went to Palestine, I'm researching every avenue I can. I'm on YouTube. I'm on the internet reading articles. I'm looking at Google Earth. And, like, nowadays, man, you click on YouTube, how to change a transmission, how to do whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
How to throw a jerkbait on brush piles. I promise you there's a video. And, I mean, I'm telling you, it's there. And the resources are there. So, absolutely, these guys will – they'll search on YouTube and scroll to someone kayak fishing. If they can get one little nugget, and that's the key, you know, just getting that one extra little bit of confidence in a bait or anything, and they will do that. They're going to research it. So, but I try to give out as much as I can on my YouTube. I mean, I kind of feel like sometimes I give out too much info, but
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. I have a good time doing it. I don't mind. I love filming, so it's a lot of fun.
So do you get nuggets from other guys' stuff?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Them guys, they give – Edwin gave out on YouTube. He gave out the Google Earth deal. And, you know, I did that a lot, but I didn't really – now it's like elevated the game where, like, you better know the latest, greatest deal, active target. You better Google some stuff on that, and you better YouTube how to learn how to use that. And it's just it never changes. It evolves.
Very nice. All right, let's talk a little bit about your setup. One thing that I noticed, you were using a shorter rod. You weren't using a 7-foot rod. Kind of talk about your setup, the line, because I know the line was very important for that jerkbait. Tell the fans about that.
So I was using, I've always been a 7-foot jerkbait guy. I've always thrown a 7-foot rod, and that's just my standard. I throw 15-pound line a lot of times. But this was a little different deal. I was throwing a 6'6" jerkbait rod, which is very short, man. I mean, it felt like a crappie rod, but I'm going to tell you the advantages of it. It was a medium action rod. It was a favorite Rush rod, 6'6", which I like a 6'8" also. And I had one on my deck, a 6'8". In hindsight, 2020, I wish I'd have used the 6'8" because I had a little extra tip on there to set the hook. But it worked out okay. But the 6'6" medium, it was very forgiving. And I could throw that jerkbait way further. It was like a slingshot, man. I mean, I would slingshot it with 12-pound line as far as I could, and it cast really, really good. 12-pound Seaguar and Vizx line, 6-3-1 reel, and, you know, that deeper jerkbait. That was the deal for me. But that rod, that 6'6" rod, it worked really, really good. And this week was probably one of the few times I've ever even thrown that rod. But I caught some on it in practice, a couple of them, and I caught some at the house. And I said, this might be the deal. But that little rod is probably going to go on my mantle also. I love that rod.
That's cool. That's really cool. All right. You mentioned it earlier, the cadence that you were using with this jerkbait. Were you switching it up all the time, or were you primarily sticking with the same cadence throughout the days?
You know, you see a lot of guys, they throw a jerkbait out there and they got a 1-2,
yeah.
1-2, yeah. 1-2. My cadence, what I've always thrown out there is I throw it as far as I can. I'll reel them down and it's like a 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and I'll just sit there instead of just steadily jerking on it. Because you got to keep in mind, this water was not cold. Like, it was 58 degrees. I mean, I probably could have threw it out there and really got after it. But when you throw it out there, you want to let that bait pause and then let the fish rise up to it and then trigger them to eat, you know. So I would switch it up just depending on what the fish was doing, because I was looking at him. I was like, hey, what's he doing? Does he like this? Does he like that? And then finally he would stop. Here's one more little nugget, guys. Those fish would rise up to my jerkbait, and I'd look at it, and I'd just leave it there. And I'd pop him up a couple times, pop, pop, and he'd come out and just eat it. And, God, it felt good when they locked up on it. I kind of want to go right now.
When will be the next time you get on the water?
Man, you know, today I'm going to be wrapped up doing some stuff. I really need to get all my stuff organized. I hadn't even unpacked my truck yet. I hadn't had time, but I'll probably go tomorrow, to be honest with y'all. I can't go but just a few days without going. I mean, it's starting to warm up. Fish are biting. They ain't going to catch themselves. Somebody got to catch them.
That's awesome. That's good stuff. All right, man, we're going to let you go, but fantastic job, and congratulations on that red trophy, the fat check, and many more to come.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it, and y'all follow us. We'll be on Sam Rayburn here in about a month, and we're looking forward to it.
All right. Dustin, take care, man. Be safe. Thanks for taking time out, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there you have it, the Red Crest champion, Mr. Dustin Connell, $300,000. All right, we're going to do this. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to open up the Sunline Hotline, and we will wrap up Monday. Ken Duke tomorrow, special guest host. So we'll be right back after a few minutes. Everybody stay tuned.
The Ned Rig. What rod should I be using with the Ned Rig? My favorite is the Denali Lithium multi-spin rod. It's our 7'4" length, great Ned Rig rod. It's got a great sensitive tip on it. It's long enough where I can make long casts, which you're usually fishing clear water with a Ned Rig, and it's got enough backbone to get those fish in. So check it out, Denali Lithium Series 7'4" multi-spin.
Pro-inspired, pro-designed, tested and proven by legends on the water, dominating the tournament trail for over 50 years. Everything you need, one legendary brand, Strike King.
Hey guys, Major League Fishing Pro Jacob Wheeler here with my new Signature Series line of rods with Duckett Fishing. We have my 7'2" cranking rod right here. Crankbaits can be very fickle, and having the right, you know, having a lot of tip can be too much, and having not enough tip can, you know, lose a lot of fish. So you really got to be careful. If there's one or two techniques that I'm really, really adamant about having the perfect action is a crankbait, especially like a square bill, a DT6. You know, those medium running crankbaits in the springtime when those fish's mouth are pretty tough, that's when I'm really, really, really on top of having my actions just perfect.
Guys, what makes our Spro lures beat the competition?
I mean, you have to admit, we nailed it with my McSticks and rock crawlers.
Man, we've all won money on my plugs.
My Wimex shop put fish in my boat.
One thing's for sure, we all count on our Spro lures to beat the competition.
Designing cutting-edge baits with some of America's top anglers, Spro lures beat the competition. To see the entire lineup, visit a retailer near you or spro.com.
Utilizing my experience, utilizing my time on the water, evolving as an angler, and that evolution should never stop. You have to do it every day. From when you wake up in the morning, you got to be thinking about changing, continually changing every minute, every cast. That's really the premise of fishing the moment.
Everyone, Brandon Palnick here. People always be asking me what I got tied on. I'm like, X-Zone lures. And they're like, Brandon, why you got X-Zone lures tied on? And I'm like, let me show you why.
The bite.
Get out of there. Get out of there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's freaking big.
Get in here.
Oh, God.
Giant.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I think you get the point.
So this ball is going to fit all styles, all different layouts, all different bowling centers, all different house shots. This is right as your benchmark ball. That solid cover is going to provide enough traction, but the core is also going to make it push a little bit more as well. So it just covers everything. It's a ball I'm going to use a lot. I know you guys are going to use it. It's going to be very popular. The Hero Solid falls right in the middle for me. It's a ball that I can use after a little bit of carry down, a little bit as the lane breaks down. Those fresh medium patterns, it covers such a wide spectrum of all oil conditions. It's a ball that I'm going to use a lot.
Back on a Monday, closing the show out with a couple of phone calls. Get your take on what went down over the weekend. And hopefully Matt's using sunscreen today. Man, he was a little fried yesterday. All right, let's go to the phones. Hey, you're on BTL. Who is this?
Hey, this is John in Ohio. How are you doing today, Mark?
John, I'm doing good, man. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just going to say, I think it was one of the best fishing weeks to watch the media fishing that I can remember in the years to come or years past, to be able to watch the Bassmasters coverage on Fox, watch Major League Fishing on the internet, and I just thought how cool it was to have both media groups playing such good, having such good content. And I was, I'm going to say this, I was really impressed with Bassmasters content on FX and on Fox Sports. And I just want to get your comments about that.
Yeah, I thought it was a great weekend. I opened the show for the first time in history. There was live fishing and live bowling on at the same time. So
I saw that. Yeah.
I was in heaven. It was good stuff. It was really good. And I think both organizations did a great job this weekend and really throughout the week. And it's unfortunate, and we've had this discussion on the show numerous times, it's unfortunate that you have both going on at the same time. You know, hopefully the future, they'll be able to not be on top of each other, but we'll see what happens, man.
Right, but I was able to experience it all because I had shoulder surgery on Thursday, and that's what killed me about before your live show today. I watched the replay of the Spro show, and I love to fish Del Hall Lake and love throwing that Spro rock crawler down there, and it's killed me looking at those new colors.
Yeah, that was good stuff. If you missed that one, go back and check it out. Matt and Bradley were at the Spro headquarters, and they kind of gave you a sneak peek. A lot of stuff, first time to be seen on the internet or anywhere else. So you might want to go back and check that out. All right, man, appreciate the call.
Yeah, all right, thank you, Mark.
All right, man, see ya.
Bye.
Yeah, that show was really, really, really cool. As I mentioned, tomorrow we're going to have Ken Duke on, and we're actually going to have him on the next 2 days as a guest host for Matt, and we're working on some guests for those two shows. So Ken Duke, always a wealth of knowledge, and probably knows more about the history aspect of bass fishing than any other human on the planet. So we will pick his brain and get into quite the interesting discussions over the next couple of days. Then on Thursday, I did speak to Frank Scalish last night. He is at Lake Norman, and they're having some bad weather roll through there, so I don't know if we're going to be able to have him on live on the water on Thursday based upon what the forecast is. But if there's any possibility that we can get Frank and Frank Jr. on the show on Thursday, live from the water at Lake Norman. We're going to do that. If not, they will be in the house that they are staying at while they take a little fishing time. I know Frank's doing some filming and doing some other things at Lake Norman. He sent me a picture yesterday. Matt mentioned it, just a fatty of a spot that was caught yesterday on Lake Norman. So a ton of stuff going on. And hey, the season, great way to kick it off. We are definitely well into what's going to go down here in 2021. And greatly appreciate everybody out there for supporting Matt and myself here on BTL. I have to mention, if you have not, please, if you're listening to the podcast, if you listen to us on iTunes, make sure you leave us a rating and please leave us a review. It helps us out immensely. We are inching toward 10,000 subscribers on YouTube, and we haven't been doing the YouTube thing very long. So greatly appreciate all the people out there that have subscribed to us. And if you know anybody out there, if you fish in a club, if you fish on the weekends, if there's people out there that don't know about BTL, please let them know. Tell them about it. And we would greatly appreciate you spreading the word about BTL. All right. This is pretty funny. I'm flying solo. My mouse right here that I used to control the music, it just went dead. And I switched the battery out. It didn't work. So I have no idea what music is going to pop up as I roll out of this show. But it is what it is. It's amazing when you're doing a live show like this that crazy stuff doesn't happen. But we have been very, very, very fortunate. And it is what it is. Sometimes that stuff happens. So back tomorrow, same time, with Ken Duke, 8:30 a.m. Central. And that's going to wrap it up. I want to thank the Red Crest champion, Mr. Dustin Connell, for taking time out of his busy schedule to be on BTL, and we will continue this thing tomorrow. Everybody out there, be safe. See you tomorrow. We're out of here.